Welcome to Australia's Fiercely Independent Property Podcast.
Residential property is the only asset class we live in. It is where we raise our families, and it's our most expensive investment, yet property advice remains unregulated.
Listen to three pioneers of the property industry, each with diverse areas of expertise in property planning, buying, and education.
We'll distill the raw truth from the ill-informed.
Join the property planner, David Johnston, the property buyer, Kate Bakos.
That's me.
And the property professor, Peter Kalizos, as we take you on a journey through the maze of property, mortgage and money decisions to empower you to create your ideal lifestyle. Hello and welcome to the Property Planner, Buyer and Professor. I'm here with my two fabulous co-hosts, Pete and Kate. How are you both today?
Very good, thank you,
Dave.
Very good. I think we need to let Kate go first because the poor thing's been in a second week of lockdown. How are you going there, Kate?
I'll just repeat what Kate said in case it wasn't clear. Living the dream.
It's not that great. Really, it's not. And I just feel for all my Melburnian buddies, but, yeah, it is what it is.
We've just been talking about Melbourne lockdown circa number four. Experience prior to coming on live. Do you want to share any of...
Yeah, we were talking about all my great ideas, you know, what I'd do if I was the Prime Minister or the State Premier, because obviously, you know, Kate Bakos has all the answers. We've got a long weekend and, you know, everyone's been holding out, hoping that their local travel plans will come to fruition and they can enjoy their long weekend. Unfortunately, that's not going to be the case because it's sounding like we've still got a restriction on how far we can go from our own homes and we can't have people inside, no house guests. So it's not really all that different. They're saying the restrictions are lifting, but there's only a very slight lift there from what we can tell so far. And we don't know yet whether we can inspect properties or go back to work. So it's a bit of a wait and see. But my theory is that we could have taken away the Queen's Birthday Monday holiday for all of Melbourne and credited it to them maybe in a month's time so that we can all take our money into the regions and have a nice little winter holiday. That's my idea. I wish they had have thought about doing something like that.
It's a good idea. The one challenge I see for that, Kate, is the famous Collingwood Melbourne Queen's Birthday weekend football match.
I'm listening, but you're on a very thin rope.
Just quickly, I'm sorry, Kate, I apologise in advance. But
for railroading me and talking footy.
Collingwood beat the Crows last weekend in the thriller.
Oh, you've got to be joking.
They did. 5 points. Yeah. 5 points. Are you talking
all
about
right,
winter?
I'm just going to go put a kettle on and come back in 5 minutes' time. You guys are very naughty.
Well, Dave was, not me, because we lost. That's why I didn't mention it.
All right.
You're talking about winter holidays. I don't know what's happening in the other states, but our state government has provided vouchers for either hotel accommodation or to go out on holidays in the region. Yeah, my wife entered and we've scored a discount on some accommodation anywhere we want in South Australia, but it has to be used quickly. So I think that's an excellent initiative because certainly tourism has been hit, and if we can't depend on interstate or overseas tourists, then we have to do the best we can, so going from the city to the regional areas. So... yeah, very much looking forward to that.
That sounds awesome.
Sounds like a good initiative.
Yeah. Mm.
We're very jealous. Again.
Indeed, yeah.
All right, so before we get into today's episode, which is listener questions number three, we've got some great listener questions to work our way through today. Have either of you got market update for us?
Yeah, of course. We've got a little bit of talk going on about the rate of increase of property values, and I read a really interesting AFR article yesterday, and people are starting to wonder when the banks could step in. And what we're noting is that a lot of borrowers aren't yet taking their borrowings to their maximum capacity. So we're seeing consumers factoring in a buffer so that they've got room to borrow more, or they're not necessarily taking up everything that was on offer there, whether it's conservative or what. And there is data there showing that people are stretching towards their borrowing capacity in an effort to, you know, beat the market and not get priced out. And at some stage, will our regulator step in and cast a bit of a spotlight on that kind of borrowing activity, because, yeah, that's the one, Dave. Yes, holding up the paper. I love it. We're in the same. Oh, hopefully I'm not stealing your.
No, it's not. No.
Good. Yeah, and there is talk. Now, what we also need to be mindful of, I've been saying for a long time that investors have been pretty quiet, but we have seen them come back, and we only need a little bit of investor activity for that to start some jungle drums. And I don't believe that investors are taking away opportunities from first home buyers by any stretch, but they're usually the first category that are picked on. So it will be interesting to see what our regulator starts to put in place if they feel that the household debt is starting to become a problem.
Yeah, it's a really good point, Kate. I think, as I touched on last week, that as the negative months of last year drop off the 12-month numbers, and we're going to actually jump, we've just moved national house prices growth of 10% over the last 12 months. I think it's going to quickly jump to 15% as those negative months drop off. And, I think the jungle drums, as you said, will beat very loudly in the next 2 to 3 months. So we'll have to keep watching this space, particularly at the same time as it's likely investor numbers keep growing.
Yeah, agreed.
Pete, what's your market update for today?
Yeah. Look, more of the same. You know, you look at the CoreLogic dashboard and it's all green with some phenomenal price increases all around the country, in particular Darwin, which now has year-on-year over 20%. But as we said last week, they're still the cheapest capital city in Australia, so they're coming from a very low base. But just a tip for our listeners, because this is something that I've been doing recently, with the market being so strong, I think, and Dave, I'd like to get your opinion on this, I think it's a great time to ask the banks to revalue your property. Now I'm in a fortunate position that I actually teach valuers what to do, so I know a little bit of the tricks of the trade. So I've been supplying them with my comparable sales, what I think is comparable. And because the market is so hot, in particular the last few months, I focus on properties that have sold in the last few months. And we did an episode just a couple of weeks ago on using comparable sales. But that was blown out of the water because we had a huge result at the auction. But that's a different story. But I think if you're looking
to... Just a conservative value of Pete.
That's right. That's right. Because, you know, you've got to understand how valuations for mortgage purposes work. Like, they've got to do like 6 or 7 a day. And the more information you can supply them with and the more you can justify the valuation, then, you know, the happier they're going to be, because then they can move on to the next valuation. So, again, we're looking at comparable sales, ideally the same location, the same suburb or a similar nearby suburb, similar size block of land, similar size house in a similar condition. And if you're looking for an exact number, and this is something we didn't do in the last episode, but I might do in a future episode, you can break down the valuation into units of measurement. You'll often find a correlation between the square metres of the house and the value, or the square metres of the land and the value. Now, if you're any good with doing graphs on Excel, you can graph that and try and predict the valuation. But I reckon that might be a good episode if my two lovely co-hosts agree. I can take people step by step through how to do a units of measurement calculation so you actually come up with not just a range but a single figure valuation.
I love this. And we've got to throw in another dimension and pop in a depreciation chart so that we can look at established properties and
very good.
Calculate the depreciation of the dwelling, which, that's a really detailed way of looking at it. And every now and then, Pete, I have to rely on that methodology as well if comparable sales are lacking.
So, Dave, what do you reckon about the valuation stuff? Was I correct?
100%. There's a few different really critical points I think you touched on in there, Pete. I'll touch on the last one first because it interconnects with land-to-asset ratio. Mm-hmm. So the higher the land-to-asset ratio, and this tends to get higher, the higher land value per square metre. So the higher price value properties, often if there's an older property on it, you know, the land value makes up such a high percentage of the valuation. So if you've got a really high land-to-asset ratio, that correlation to your point there, Pete, between certainly the land size between different properties is much more likely to correlate with the valuation figure. So, you know, by actually getting an estimate to what both of you are saying there on the land to asset ratio, it can really help with narrow in on the value of the property, particularly the higher the land to asset ratio percentage.
Yeah.
In terms of refinancing or getting your property revalued, it's a great point. It's actually something we've been talking about internally to talk to our clients about. With property values going up, you know, you might be thinking about doing a renovation. You might have been thinking about investing in property or shares, but didn't feel like you had the equity there, even though you've got the surplus cash flow. Or you might want to increase your buffer so you've got a bigger safety net. So these are all reasons to actually, yeah, be looking to get your property revalued and access some equity to either continue to grow your wealth or protect your wealth. And now, you know, anytime the market's rising, it's a great opportunity to put those things in place.
Really good tips.
The other thing I've noticed is before I started doing this, I was, you know, and with all due respect to all my mates at CoreLogic, you know, they got a wonderful database there, but that AVM, you know, I don't trust it. AVM is an automatic valuation model. But what I have been noticing as the market's gone up, when I check the value of my properties, you know, every week the automatic valuation model number also increases.
It's still lagging, isn't it?
Yeah,
I've seen several where you can imagine the algorithm has a few more reliable data points to trigger something closer to reality. And I agree with you, I throw them in the bin. But they're still well under.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
My quick market update is that Australia has maintained its AAA credit rating, which is a big tick for the pandemic management. So this is from S&P Ratings Agency. So we're only one of 9 countries in the world to have the pristine AAA balance sheet recognised from all 3 of the world's largest credit rating agencies. So in, I guess, day-to-day terms, what this means for most of us is essentially that one of the key things, the cost of our mortgages or interest rates are lower than they otherwise would be because we're such a well economically managed country. When we borrow from other countries around the world or organisations, the rates we're able to access our finance are lower. And we are overall a capital importing nation, which means we bring in more capital than we export. So we do rely on that. So I read some estimates that it means the AAA rating means our interest rates are about 0.15% lower than they otherwise would have been. So that obviously makes it a bit cheaper for us to live our lives, obviously also invest in property. So, yeah, that's my market update for this week.
Significant.
It sure is. Okay, so listener questions. So we've received some great listener questions as we do sort of ad hoc, and we thought we were due for our third episode on listener questions. So I might jump into our first question, and we should actually start including the names of who sent them through. But the first one is, the market seems to be at the top of its cycle. Is it a good time to invest in property, or should we be waiting for the demand to subside, or the chance that government regulators will step in to curb prices?
Great question.
It away, Kate.
I get this question every single day, and it's a very important question. That's why so many people are asking it. The first thing that I'll say is if our regulators jump in and try and curb things, their intention isn't to destabilise the market and have any crashes or any significant downturns. Curb is exactly what it means. So slow down the crazy rate of growth. Now, at this stage, we're not getting any indication that that's on the cards. They're not focusing on Australian residential property as a key issue. Their focus at the moment is all about GDP and employment. So particularly employment, and we've got to also obviously try and manage inflation. So I'm not sure how you guys feel about this comment, but at this stage, I don't think our regulators are focusing on the property market at all, not even thinking about curbing investment activity yet. But if and when they do, this is a really broad question. The market might be at the top of its cycle. If that's the case, it's the top of one of many cycles. And our cycles don't have super high peaks and horrible low troughs, and they don't tend to have a downturn for a particularly long period in our capital cities. And if you're going into property investment, you should be doing it for the long term, not for a short gain. So I'd argue that anyone who's trying to time the market is probably looking at it with the wrong kind of approach. And you've got to make sure that you've got a quality property and that you've buffered yourself accordingly, so that if we do have a slight downturn, if you do buy at the top of the market, you can hang in there until the next market peak overtakes this one. And it's always everyone's fear buying at the top of the market, but it's really only an issue if you crystallise a loss or if you've bought a dud and that journey of buying and holding becomes a painful one.
Absolutely. Really good points there, Kate. Pete, what would you like to add?
Yeah, yeah. Kate answered that question very comprehensively, so I'll be relatively quick. I'll break the question down into sub-questions. The market seems to be at the top of its cycle. No, if you think that property prices will be lower in 3 months' time than they are today, they won't be, so we haven't reached the top of the cycle. Is it a good time to invest in property, short-term or long-term? Because like I said, property prices will be higher in 3 or 6 months' time, and of course they'll be higher next year, the year after, and so on. Should we be waiting for demand to subside, or the chance government regulators will step into curb prices? And Kate said it very well. Curb prices means the rate of acceleration will drop. Not property prices will drop, but instead of them, say, increasing at, I don't know, 3 or 4% a month, they might only increase at 1 or 2% a month, and then they'll just flatten out. The good thing about demand dropping or subsiding is at least you have an opportunity to be successful at auction, because what I'm seeing now is so many people getting frustrated at auctions in particular, or even before then. You know, I've been working with some people and we're waiting for the auction to come, and lo and behold, the auction's not going to be held because somebody's already made a great offer. So the market is so hot that people don't even get a chance to bid at auction. And if they do bid at auction, most of them are missing out. So to sum up, the market's still going strong. It's a good time to invest in property, and I can certainly understand the frustration of you missing out. But, you know, I've also had some very good news stories. A young couple that I know had been searching and bidding at auction and putting an offer for 6 months, and they found a wonderful property, a wonderful character home in the inner western suburbs at a pretty good price. But they understood in a hot market, you know, you've got to come in with a really good price and really good conditions and, you know, be hard and fast.
Great points, Pete. And I love your confidence in the market continuing to perform. I share those sentiments, and none of us have a crystal ball, or if we do, it doesn't have a warranty, but we do have to be prepared to say what we think is happening with the market. And at this stage, we've got positive forces driving it with really strong consumer sentiment, low interest rates. Now, the way to look at this question is to flip it. If you do wait, what's the implication?
And if people want to find out what's happened in history, I reckon about a year ago when we first started doing our COVID-19 podcasts is when I did that research on what's happened to property prices after the 1970s, 80s and 90s recessions and GFC. And so people can just go and have a look at what's happened over the last 50 years after an economic dust-up, and you'll see that certainly there is a hit to property prices during, you know, whether it's the recession or the GFC or COVID-19, and it was only for a short period of time, but then they go up again. And this is, keep in mind, and this might be a great topic for another episode, I reckon we are entering in the golden era, because we've done all of this without overseas migration. You imagine what happens when hundreds of thousands of people start coming to Australia from overseas. They all need somewhere to live. In the first instance, it's got to be a place to rent. And then later on, when they get the permanent residency, it'll be a place to buy. So I think it'll be similar to the migration-led property boom of the 50s and 60s and 70s, because we haven't had anything for what will be 2 years. March next year will be 2 years of no overseas migration.
Incredible. Strong point.
Absolutely. So I'll just quickly touch on my thoughts, which are mostly aligned or basically aligned with yours. Do you think at the top of the cycle? No, I think it's got a way to go. Is it a good time to invest in property? Yes, we shouldn't be waiting for demand to subside. And or the chance that government regulators will step into curb prices. It's very likely they will at some point in time. But as we've touched on previously as well, they're very conscious to provide a very softly approach this time after, in essence, really decimating Melbourne and Sydney property prices with reductions of 12 and 15% with the last prudential regulation adjustments that they, interventions that they put in place. So we're coming out of a pandemic. We're coming out of a once in a lifetime recession. no members of government want to put at risk our recovery. So they're going to be so super conscious of not putting in curbs that put at risk our recovery. And we know the wealth effect is one of the key ways that's driven, which is our belief that we're wealthier than we otherwise would have been, is through increased property prices, which causes us to spend, which then, you know, creates jobs, increases inflation, increases the number of jobs. So, and that's the key focus, is to get jobs down to 4%. So it's got a way to go. And I think it's dangerous for you if you're thinking of holding off, because it's going to cost you a reasonable sum of money, is the most probable reality. I think we all agree on that. Look, I think the government is going to be really, really conscious to have nothing occur leading into the election that slows down the economic recovery.
100%, Dave. Yeah, we've got to remember that. Next election's only a year away or less.
They're more likely to step up slowing down the property market after they've won the election. It's actually ironic, in complete contrast to what happened at the last election.
Nothing surprises me anymore. Yeah. Nothing.
Just a quick reminder, you can access our show notes, including links to all of the resources we talk about, on our website, which is propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor.com.au.
Question number two, is now a good time to refinance? If so, why?
I love this question, and you touched on it earlier, Pete. I absolutely think it's a great time to refinance, and not necessarily just to get the obvious outcome, to get a sharper rate or to do something with the money. It's to make sure you're managing your buffer accounts and your war chest while you can. So if you're in a position to have some credit available there, whether it's line of credit or popping some available cash in an offset account, and to just have a little bit of buffer around you, you can sleep a lot easier. You can be in a position to take advantage of an opportunity that might not have necessarily had a lot of planning leading up to it. So sometimes amazing opportunities and situations land in our lap. And it's when you're not in a position to grab them that you can have a lot of regret. So, for example, it could be, you know, a family member has an opportunity for you, whether it's buying someone out or making an investment decision that is really a short opportunity that's a really exciting one for you at an advantageous time. So I'm a big believer in having available credit around you, not necessarily in use, and managing it really carefully. But now is a good time to be doing something, because we've had really tough lending conditions in the past. And, you know, high lender scrutiny, we still do, but it's a lot better than what it was a couple of years ago. And I'd rather see myself in a position to be able to grab an opportunity than wait until credit tightens again.
Great answer, Kate. Pete, did you want to add anything to that?
Again, Kate answered it very comprehensively, and we're exactly on the same page. Whether you want to borrow the money to do something with is one question, but so far as the conditions are concerned, the conditions to refinance are fantastic. Property prices have gone up, so you should have more equity, and interest rates have been really low for a year when they dropped them by 0.4% back in March or April last year. And there's also competition amongst banks. I think I made a comment in an article where the National Australia Bank had dropped their interest rates to the lowest ever for investors. So, you know, talk to your strategic mortgage broker, see what the great deals are. But the other thing is, you can start getting your ducks in a row now by getting your properties revalued, because that isn't that one of the steps to refinancing, Dave? They need to revalue your properties?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well answered. I'll just add to that. I think another reason on top of what you've both said is we're taking up fixed rates at a level that we never have historically. So generally speaking, variable rates, the really good low variable rates were lower than the fixed rates. But at this point in time, for much of it, fixed rates have been as low and sometimes lower than the really low variable rates. Now, the fixed rates are starting to creep up, and that's only likely to occur further because they've been artificially reduced, if you like, because the government has been targeting buying three-year bonds to keep the yield at 0.1% in line with the RBA's cash rate, which is what affects variable rates. They've also been provided a $200 billion term funding facility that ends at the end of June to the major banks, which has kept their cost of funding very low as well. That one's coming to an end, and the RBA targeting the 0.1% three-year bond yield, which keeps the three-year fixed rates in particular low, is probably going to slowly be tapered away. And so I think most likely, highest probability, is that fixed rates are going to keep only getting a bit higher. They're probably going to move before variable rates. This sort of intersects actually with some of the next question because they ask on interest rates. So if you want to fix in some of your borrowings to lock in some certainty for the next 3 to 5 years, yeah, I think that's another reason to look at refinancing today, because the higher probability is that fixed rates in particular are going to continue to increase, and we've already started seeing the early days of that because they've been artificially kept lower because of the stimulus measures and quantitative easing that the government's put in place. Anything to add to that, guys?
No, perfectly said.
I think you've beautifully touched on the next question, to be honest, Dave.
Yeah, you have. Excellent segue.
Stole half of the answer.
No, you detailed it really well.
Okay, so question number three, what's your opinion on where interest rates will go over the next 12 to 18 months? And should I be fixing some of my debt now while fixed rates are low? So I've probably answered a fair bit of that second part.
I'll say something that you didn't touch on, and that is be really clear when you fix a rate what your motivation is and whether you're introducing any potential future stress for yourself. Because if you fix a rate, you're effectively buying a product that has a shelf life and you're committing to that. It's like signing a contract for, you know, a mobile phone or whatever. If you decide in 6 months that you don't want the phone that you've got a 12-month contract on, you've got to pay out a portion of it. And the same can be said for a fixed rate loan. There's what we call economic break costs. So the bank will charge you that in one foul hit if you sell your property or need to get out of that loan product. So you've got to be really careful about what your motivation is for fixing and what your own time horizon is. And I think also, you know, we're hearing a lot of talk about bond yields moving, but it arguably could be one of the best times to hedge your bets and get a sharp fixed interest rate. But I don't think that we're likely to get out of this low interest rate environment for a long, long time. So we're talking about still modest increases, not dramatic increases.
Yeah, and so there's the RBA cash rate, which impacts variable rates, and then there's the bond yields, which impacts the fixed rates.
That's right.
So, Pete, do you have any thoughts on the RBA cash rate, which is generally what most, I guess, consumers are thinking about when they're asking what will happen to interest rates?
Well, the RBA is virtually promised, guaranteed, whatever word you want to use, that for 2 to 3 years it's not going to go up. Doesn't mean that what the interest rate on your mortgage won't go up, because there is, you know, the banks can apply whatever interest rate they want. But I can see that the cash rate is going to stay at its current level for a long time.
Yeah, I agree. There's some inflationary pressures that are building and being talked about around the world. And, you know, job ads, for example, ANZ just put out there at their highest level for 12 and a half years. They've actually brought in their predictions for unemployment to be down at into the, I think, 4.5% by the end of 2023. So that could start to put some pressure on the variable rates or the cash rate increasing sooner, but I still think it's very unlikely that that's going to happen within 18 to 24 months. On Kate's point, really good points about the fixed rates. So some weaknesses around fixed rates on top of what Kate's mentioned with the economic costs. So if you pay it out early, it can be up for a big cost. Most of them don't allow you to attach an offset account to reduce the interest on a fixed rate. So it almost always pays to have part of your debt on a variable rate. And so then what you want to think about is, what is the maximum amount in the best case scenario you think you could pay off over the term of the fixed rate? Okay, because most fixed rates also have limitations on how much you can repay. And you don't want to get to a point where you've 100% paid off all your variable rate loan and then you can't actually pay extra off or offset against your fixed rate loan. So always make sure you've got a variable component that is actually more than you think you can pay off in your best case scenario over the fixed rate period.
Awesome advice. And you had one itty bitty little hint of gold there, Dave. You said most fixed rate products don't offer an offset. I know that there are very few that do, and a couple of them are cracking products. So that is such a good reason to chat to a strategic mortgage broker, because I think you'd have a pretty hard time just walking into a branch and asking for a fixed rate product with an offset account and nailing the lender.
100%. Good point, Kate. None of the major banks offer 100% offset accounts linked to fixed rates. There's about two lenders out there, two or three, that offer 100% offsets linked to fixed rates. So if that tickles your fancy, have a chat to a great strategic mortgage broker. All right, so we'll jump into this. Might be our last question for the day. I'm a first-time buyer, and I'm not sure whether I should buy a stepping stone home, investment, or long-term home. How do I decide? And I know this is the type of thing that we're writing property plans for regularly. But
Dave, could I answer this question first? Because you can both hammer me if I get it wrong. But I'm going to answer it as a parent. Like if my kid had asked me this question. All right, so. You know, without knowing all the details, or assuming they were my child, all right? So I'm not assuming they're one of your clients, right? I would say, number one, if you can, stay at home and buy an investment property, all right? But if that's not an option, then I think you should buy a stepping stone home rather than wait for your long-term home. And if I could explain that with some simple numbers, let's say your stepping stone home is worth $400, but your dream or long-term home is worth $800, all right? And let's say you've got $40,000, which would allow you a 5% deposit to buy the home and also pay the stamp duty. If you buy that $40,000 home today, it'll probably go up 10% in the next 12 months. So you've just made an extra $40,000. Now, you can still keep saving, but if you wait and just only save so you can save up for that long-term home, well, now that long-term home has gone from 800 to 880. So you're really just chasing your tail. So my advice to my kids or, you know, the young people listening is get into good property as soon as you can, and then as that grows in value, that allows you to buy a second, bigger and or better property or an investment property. How did I go? Was that the right answer, Kate, Dave?
That's really good.
It's great advice, Pete. But I dare say, well, you haven't pitched it as a client pitch, so I can't say it's wrong. But my answer was, it depends. And it depends on so many factors. This is a very, very big question. It's, you know, it's like asking someone the meaning of life, and it precipitates conversation that could go for 100 episodes. Dave, you know this, because you sit down to profile someone and answer this very question. There are so many things we need to know. And the first one is, what does your future home look like? If it's a property that is within your reach financially to get sooner rather than later, that could be the right one to go for. If you're wanting to live in, you know, Hawthorne, well, it might not happen that quickly. And what are your cash flows? How much surplus cash have you got? Are you partnered up with someone? Are you likely to partner up with someone? If you partner up with someone, is it going to trigger selling your investment property? Do you like living with your parents? Are you a good house sharer? What does your job look like and your future income trajectory? They're just some of the really critical questions. And I'm a big believer in getting into the market as early as you can. But sometimes if you're jumping in early and getting a property that isn't a buy and hold for at least 5 years, you could be chewing up some of your equity quicker than you wanted to with transition costs and selling costs and more stamp duty. So you've got to think really carefully about how long you can hold that first property, because I see a lot of young buyers getting into rent vesting, and it's great. I love rent vesting. but for the right reason and for the right property, for the right situation. Because if you rent vest and then you sell it, you've defeated the purpose of it. You haven't given yourself long enough to get that growth. And you've also got to factor in what the chances are of buy and hold if you have future acquisition plans that aren't too far away. If you can keep that investment, that's great. But if it really is a stepping stone and you might have to sell it, you've got to make your purchase decision with that in mind.
Yeah, absolutely. Some of the big risks we see often with these types of clients when we're writing a property plan or whether they're just a mortgage client is subject to their stage of life, and that's sort of that critical point that a lot of your questions revolve around, Kate. And Pete's advice is spot on. Probably, if they're still living with mum and dad and they're probably earlier in that stage, so Pete's probably thinking of, number of his own kids are in that sort of early to mid-20s. They're not necessarily settled down with a partner or have any kids. And so it really does depend what stage of life you are as that first-time buyer. If you're able to still be living with your parents and you're a fair way off having any perception around your long-term home, where you might live, who your life partner is going to be, you can't really narrow in as clearly on that long-term home, and Peter's advice is great. But you've got to ask all those questions that Kate asked. And so getting back to what I started saying there is often with these types of clients, they struggle to see further ahead than 2 or 3 years. And
we all do. I think that's human nature. It's very, very hard to plan anything that from a future home point of view, 5 years plus. I think that's really hard.
I think it gets proportionately easier the older you get.
Yeah.
And the more settled you become. And so that's the piece of the puzzle. And everyone's different too. Some people are more settled in where they want to be throughout their life. Others are more likely to move around, and even work overseas in various countries. So it really does come down to the individual. Certainly often people can make decisions they can't see further out than 2 or 3 years. And one of the things we really try and help first-time buyers do is stretch their thinking to about 10 years. And if we can stretch them to think to 10 years and then bring back that next property decision to have a willingness that you might have to hold this property, and if it's a stepping stone home, you might have to live in this property for even up to 10 years. How does that make you feel? It just gets them thinking in a different direction than they might have been previously, which can then open up the mind a bit more to consider different options that people might have been closed off to. And that's one of the biggest things we try to do is actually get people to look at, different paths or different directions than they might have had when they came to us for a property plan.
I love it. I recently had a client I worked with who had a property plan and they had decided to be rent vesters. They'd sold a townhouse that they'd bought together that they'd pretty much outgrown. And then they decided to buy their forever future home, but because it was so close to the wire and it was, a tight financial fit, they were going to rent vest. So find the property that they'd love to live in one day and continue renting for now and pop a tenant in their forever house. So we got them a period house that will respond really well to a cosmetic renovation here in Yarraville Village, which was their aspiration. A double front in Yarraville that they can't live in right now. Economically, it doesn't fit for them to do that, but they can look forward to it in future years. And so there's lots of ways to skin the cat, and it comes down to what you're comfortable with. Pete, I've got a question for you to add some context to your parental answer to this question. How old were each of your children when they purchased their first property?
Well, that's easy because I've only got one child that's purchased a property. And she's only purchased 50% with me.
Yep, great.
So we did that 2.5 years ago. She was 27. So my kids range in age from 22 to 31. Interestingly, daughter number 3, who's 25, she's currently interstate, but she's coming back home. And the main reason is because she's paying $450 a week rent in Canberra, and that's very hard to pay that rent and save. So she's coming home and going to live at home for at least a year, save some money, and then buy a home to live in.
That's fantastic.
So all of those years of living, you know, of living with her old man, that finally through a process of osmosis, it's getting through to some of them. Not all of them, but getting through to some of them.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Going full circle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the things we talked to first-time buyers about as well, and I think there's a big difference if it's singles versus couples who, you know, potentially with their life partner, is if they've got some clarity around where they think they would like to live long-term but they can't afford the long-term home at the moment, we often talk to them about getting the stepping stone home or the investment in and around the same area as where they would ideally like to live long-term. So they're at least matching the market cycle of that future long-term home. And I've seen plenty of times where, unfortunately, people sometimes, you know, with, you know, buyer's agents, sometimes with spruikers, where they've maybe purchased their first property, you know, interstate and best intentions, but the cycle of that capital city has just nowhere near matched the capital city where they lived. And so it's moved them a long way away from being able to take that step towards the future home. And they haven't really considered that when they purchased that first property. And so it's really cost them a lot for their where they're going to be able to live in the future. So Kate's used 10 great questions that we need to ask people. Pete's had plenty of great examples there. There's so many different considerations to work through. And what's right for one person is going to be totally different for other people.
Yeah, great point.
Is there anything else that either of you would like to add there?
I think that's a wrap up. It's all very
informative. 2 minutes left for gold nuggets.
I love listener questions because, you know, we're obviously really connecting with our listeners because we're answering exactly the questions that they would like answered.
And sorry to our listeners, that was my wailing Siamese cat in the background. One thing I'm really hating about lockdown in winter is the cat reminds you how many times it wants to go in and out during the day. I don't know how we deal with it.
Sure the cat's loving having you at home though, Kate.
Oh, can't wait to get back to work.
All right, great. Well, yeah, I think we might have to do listener questions a bit more regularly moving forward.
Yeah, keep them coming.
Yeah, they're really good. So please keep them coming, listeners, and we'll head into our gold nuggets.
If you've enjoyed our podcast, leave a review on iTunes and share the episode with your friends.
Now it's time for us to go mining for our gold nugget property tip of the day.
What's your gold nugget for today, Pete?
Well, mine's just a bit of a summary of the four questions that we answered, Dave. So my gold nugget is the market is not at the top of its cycle. It's a great time to refinance. One of the reasons is because interest rates aren't going anywhere, so you've got the opportunity to lock in some really good interest rates. And buy yourself a good property as soon as you can afford it rather than waiting to save up to buy that dream.
Great advice, Pete.
Awesome gold nugget. My gold nugget is just to let our listeners know that we still have another question or two that we didn't get to cover off today. And one of them is actually about China and the impact of our trading relations or difficulties within our trading relations and how that could impact the market. And I think, dare I say it, we could actually put out a podcast on this very topic. So stay tuned.
That's an interesting segue there, Kat, if I could just interrupt for 10 seconds. As soon as we finish this podcast, I'm reading this research paper from one of my students. Which strategies could be used to attract Chinese investors to the Australian residential property market based on non-capital factors, including education and holiday houses? Because education in particular is a big attraction to many people from overseas, but including the Chinese, and that then is often a segue into buying property in Australia.
What a great thing to end on, and we've got some good work to do, and Pete will go over some of your study notes and incorporate some of these ideas.
Yeah, that might be an entirely individual episode on this topic. I look forward to the rundown on what your student's written, Pete.
Okay, I'll send you the conclusion at the end.
Sounds good. All right. Well, it's been a pleasure as always, and look forward to catching up with you both again same time. time, same bat channel next week.
Thank you very much.
See you soon, guys.
Stay warm.
If you've enjoyed this episode and would like to learn more about the topics covered, take a listen to episode number 6, What Determines Your Property Strategy? Episode number 9, Why Your Mortgage Strategy is More Important Than Your Interest Rate? Episode number 12, Property Cycle Management, Why Now Is Always the Best Time to Buy If It Suits Your Personal Economy and You Have a Long-Term Property Plan? Episode 19, Time in the Market Versus Timing the Market? And finally, episode 77, Property Planning and Your Next Purchase, Critical Considerations and Why Modelling Financial Outcomes is Vital to Success.
Thank you for joining the property planner, David Johnston, whose company Property Planning Australia provides the only independent pure planning advisory in Australia that does not buy or sell property, insurance, investment or super product.
And the property buyer, Kate Bacos, recently awarded Buyer's Agent of the Year and an owner of an independent buyer's agency in Melbourne's Inner West. And of course, the property professor, Peter Kalizos, Australia's leading property university lecturer, chairman of Property Investment Professionals of Australia, and seasoned investor and developer.
We've really enjoyed delivering this podcast, and we'd love you to join us on our podcast webpage at propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor.com.au or our Facebook page. Feel free to send us any questions and Dave, Pete and I will answer them for you.
So until next time, remember that each property decision you make is leading you towards your ideal lifestyle.
Everything we talk about in this episode is general in nature and should not be considered to be financial advice. We've put a lot of effort into making sure the information is accurate, but please don't rely on this information to make a decision. If you're looking for specific advice, please seek the help of a specialist, and remember, it's important you determine your trusted advisors are independent.